Tuesday night edition of the Dunktime Basketball Podcast. Got a lot to get to here. KD suffers a knee injury of unknown severity. The Warriors have signed Matt Barnes. They will sign and then immediately waive Jose Calderon. Instead, DeMarcus Cousins suspended again. George Hill unable to reach a renegotiation and extension agreement with the Utah Jazz. And then we got to get to our awards too. We may not get through all that today, but certainly the big ones, all NBA teams, MVP, that type of stuff, we will get to for sure. Want to remind you as well to check out the Twitter NBA show Second Screen. Danny and I actually did a practice today, and tomorrow we're going live first time with the two-man show for Cavs Celtics at 8 Eastern. If you want to get alerted of it, go onto my profile on Twitter mobile. There is a bell next to my name. You click that, there's a drop-down menu, and there's a field to alert you if I go with live video. We only really do it when we're doing one of those shows, so we'd love for you guys to get alerted to that as well. Our sponsors today, Indochino. My listeners can get any premium Indochino suit for just $389 when entering the cap space code at checkout. Awesome made to measure suits at Indochino. And then MeUndies. MeUndies.com/capspace will get you 20% off your first pair of the most comfortable underwear that you will own.
So full disclosure, I'm actually re-recording this part now without Danny, who is retired for the evening, but we got the news shortly after we had finished recording, Woj tweeting out there's a fear that the injury could be months, not weeks, that KD and his camp and the Warriors are bracing for that, still waiting for the MRI tomorrow with Kevin Durant. For those who didn't see the play, Zaza Pachulia got thrown down by Marcin Gortat, flopped a little bit, certainly. Got a foul call, but then he slammed into Durant's leg. Durant wasn't looking at him, and it appeared to make contact with the front of his knee. A hyperextension occurred. We didn't really get that great of a close-up on the replay, at least from what I could see. Nothing I saw that looked that awful in terms of like enough of a bend there that it would be ligament damage, but that is not at all an encouraging tweet from Woj. News also coming out that the Warriors signing Matt Barnes for the rest of the season now. They are going to follow through on their agreement to sign Jose Calderon, but then will then immediately waive him and then sign Barnes. That'll enable Calderon to be eligible to be on a playoff roster somewhere else. Barnes was sorely needed. They didn't have any other natural three men or stretch fours really on the roster. Hopefully he would enable them, if Durant is going to be out a significant amount of time, to still play small on occasion with Draymond Green at the five, give them some more depth at the three. They don't really have a starting three. They don't like to start Andre Iguodala, of course, and Patrick McCaw way too skinny to start at the three at this point in his career. So I think where it's going to be most interesting now, if Durant does miss, say, the rest of the regular season, don't know if it'll be beyond that, but it seems like with this news that he'll be out for most of the rest of the regular season at least, we're going to get to find out whether Steph Curry is the player that he was during last year's regular season or not. If he is, I think the Warriors could still win the championship even if Durant is limited throughout the playoffs or can't play in the playoffs. But if Steph Curry is going to just continue to be kind of the guy that we've seen throughout most of this year, as inconsistent as he has been, then you have to wonder. They are in pretty good position relative to San Antonio, leading them by 3.5 games now, I think. And the Spurs do play them 3 more times, though, 2 of which are in San Antonio. If San Antonio could win all 3 of those contests, they could make it interesting. But the Spurs also not really known for pushing that hard. It'll be interesting to see what happens, though. The Warriors will be very reliant on a home court advantage if, in fact, Durant is going to miss some time in the playoffs. So we'll see. I'm sure everyone in Golden State is hoping for the best. I'm going to bring in Danny now, and we'll do the rest of the show, but wanted to make sure we got that news out there at the start of things.
Let's just spend like 1 minute on this because it's way too early to be speculating on this. But I said before the season that even if the Warriors lost Steph or KD, that they could still be looked at as the championship favorites. Do you think that that would still be true now?
It's close. I mean, Cleveland got deeper over the last little bit. I don't think that makes a huge difference in the playoffs. If we assume that Cleveland can get back to full strength, I think that's a very close series, if you imagine it. But I think they're favored over everyone else.
Yeah, I don't know. If you could convince me that Steph Curry was the same guy from last year, I'd agree with you. And that's going to be one of the side effects if KD does miss time, is we're going to find out a little bit more about where Steph Curry really is, because he's alternated between going on these binges and then deferring and then going 0 for 11 on threes and then having an okay game again. I mean, they did stick right with Washington, a good East team, down to the wire, despite being down by 19 and having no KD for basically the whole game. I still think they could be pretty good. I actually like their overall depth more this year than I did last year. But it really comes down to the fact of whether Steph is going to be as good. If he's not playing at the level of, you know, an all-time great, then it gets to be maybe they're more like that 2015 team and maybe not as good defensively. It's tough to say exactly. So let's get into some other news here. DeMarcus Cousins has been suspended again. He picked up a technical foul just a couple minutes into the game for what seemed like a relatively mild altercation with Steven Adams. However, the technical was not rescinded, and with that, his 18th technical foul of the season, he will be suspended. Who do they play next?
The Detroit Pistons.
Is that at home or in Detroit?
I think it's in New Orleans, but I'm legitimately unsure. I picked it for League Pass Games of the Week, but I can't remember where it is.
Well, that's going to be an interesting game. Remember, AD put up 59 against them last year, and they're going to need a performance like that, because now without Cousins, remember, they dealt away a lot of their wing depth, and Caspi, the other fruit of that trade, isn't even on the team anymore now. So they are really, really thin without Cousins, and man, going to 0-4, I mean, at least this will be probably their best chance to win a game, and now they've pissed it away because Cousins got this technical foul. It hasn't been a very good start for Boogie as far as being this transformational figure to help the team win, that's for sure.
The game is in New Orleans, and they do also have the benefit of Detroit playing an overtime game today against Portland, so they should be at least a little bit more tired. But yeah, I mean, the Pelicans are going to need everything that they have to win this game.
All right, we got a little more news to get to, but first, this from MeUndies. Settling is even worse than settling for store-bought underwear 5-packs. I hope you haven't been, because that would be pretty miserable. Those don't feel very good, but MeUndies will change your life for the better if you have been. They're designed in LA and made from sustainably sourced micromodal, even softer than the cat that just jumped up on my lap and is now bumping into the microphone. It's 3 times softer than cotton. They sent me a few pairs to get started. I actually bought some more of them as well. I really like them. They're the most comfortable pair of underwear that I have owned. And there's a number of ways that you can get started with them. One is to do a monthly subscription. You could save up to 33% each month that way. You select your style, your size, and the plan, and MeUndies will send you the undies they think you'll swoon for each month. But if you're not ready for a subscription, you can also save because they're offering 20% off your first pair. So make sure you use our special URL, MeUndies.com/capspace. That'll get you that 20% off your first pair, and also let them know, of course, that you came from us. That helps us out to get the advertising renewal, so you can revamp your underwear drawer. You deserve it. You can be someone who's not buying your underwear in 5-packs any longer at the store and is a lot more comfortable. MeUndies.com/capspace is the URL to get started with them. All right, the cat has settled in on my lap. Gonna make typing and moving the mouse around a little difficult, but we're gonna persevere because he's been very insistent about laying down. Let's get to George Hill. I thought that this was something that had been in the works for a long time with Hill, the potential for a renegotiation and extension. Utah had preserved $13 million in cap space. They did not claim Deron Williams to bolster the backup point guard position, likely for the reason that they thought they could renegotiate and extend George Hill. But alas, they were unable to reach an agreement. We don't know exactly what Utah offered. I would imagine that it was pretty close to the max that they could, which would have been essentially $88 million in new money over the next 3 years. The way it would work is they pay him the extra $13 million this year. That bumps up his $8 million salary, and then you can build an extension starting at 107.5% of this year's salary up to 3 years. We're still operating under the old extension rules here. It would be 4 under the new agreement, but 3 now, because you count this season, and you can have a 4-year extension counting this season. And that would have been basically another $75 million or so over the next 3 years, in addition to the $13 million in new money. So it's essentially a 3-year, $88 million contract that he could have signed. Are you surprised that he elected not to take that? If in fact that was offered, which it seems to indicate that they did.
I am a little bit surprised because he's missed so much time due to injury. George Hill, when he's healthy, is worth a lot of money, even if he is 31. You know, he could age reasonably well if he could stay on the court. And point guards of his caliber are of value around the league. We're going to see players of his age get paid a lot of money this summer. But
yeah, he'll be 31 this offseason, by the way.
But with his history, that's a lot of money to leave on the table. He took a contract that looked, you know, looked reasonable at the time, but has been become a great
value.
Like
even a little overpaid at the time, that 5-year, $40 million extension that he signed after he was traded for Kawhi Leonard in Indianapolis, Indiana.
His hometown. And so that weighs on me. I always think about a guy who even if it was fair at the time that it looks cheap, that that player usually doesn't walk away from a lot of money. I'm thinking the same thing with Paul Millsap. But he had so much security right now to get life-changing, maybe life-changing money is a term that we could use for a lot of different contracts. But $88 million is a ton for a player who has been making less than $10 million a year. And I'm a little bit surprised also because of the situation. So I wrote about this, you and I both talked about it, both on GChat and on Twitter, about how there are other teams that are going to have a lot of money to offer and may choose to throw that at George Hill after the other point guards presumably head back to their current teams. But none of them are nearly as good a situation as the Jazz are if Gordon Hayward stays.
Yeah, and perhaps that was part of Hill's thinking that he might not be as interested in staying. Perhaps more of his thinking was that he could get a max offer. And he's solidly fourth in the point guard hierarchy if we assume, though, that Steph Curry is not going anywhere. I mean, he might even be fifth, I guess, if you want to say Holiday's probably ahead of him considering his younger age. So Curry, Paul, Kyle Lowry, and then Hill has probably been a little bit better than Jrue Holiday this year, but Holiday is younger and actually has been more durable than Hill this year. And Hill is having, of course, a career year. He's had one other year like this when he had more of a chance to get the ball in his hands, but again, only played 40 games in that one. This toe injury apparently has continued to nag him. So to me, look at it this way, right? Let's say he gets a 4-year max offer from another team. That would be 4 years, $132 million. But remember, you're tacking on an extra year. This would be essentially 3 years, $88 million. But then add to that whatever he could get. He'd probably be a backup quality player by that point. So maybe he gets another $10 million for that last year. So you're basically looking at a little under $100 million. But there's the advantage of, number one, staying in Utah, where he presumably is happy. And number two, you get your money now. There's no risk of a performance decline. There's no risk of an injury or this toe flaring up, or you have to have surgery. And there's no risk that you misread the market and that max offer is not, in fact, waiting for you. I think more likely than not that max offer won't be waiting for him. I think he's could get, you know, $20 million, maybe even $25 million for 3 years on the market. But I don't see a 4-year max offer in his future. Some teams that might consider him, Chicago will probably have a need at point guard. They could have max space. Milwaukee maybe could clear out a little bit of space depending on what they do. Minnesota potentially could use him. They'll have pretty good space. The Knicks, Orlando maybe could open up a little bit more depending on what they do. Philly would be a very obvious candidate. He'd be a great fit next to Ben Simmons. And Sacramento, of course, is going to have more cap space than they can shake a stick at and no team at all. Probably don't want to go there, but the Sacramento leverages are always in play. So there are teams that might give him that offer, but a lot of them are not really in a position where you want to give a 4-year offer to a 31-year-old, you know, so you can be paying him well over $30 million a year when he is 34, 35 years old and really wasn't that great in his career. I mean, he's always been a solid starter for sure, but this is really the only year that he's played at like really this elite level other than half a year beforehand. So a lot of risk there in turning this down to me.
Agreed. And I've seen certain people talk about a return to the Spurs, but that is unrealistic for a couple different reasons. The most prominent being that if Pau Gasol opts in, they're not going to have cap space and they would have to do something distinctly un-Spurs, like trade Tony Parker or trade Pau Gasol after he opts in to make that happen. I don't consider them a serious threat. I would say, just from a practical perspective, the biggest contender of the group of teams that you discussed is the Knicks. Not only a major market, but a team that he could fit in well. He would fit in the triangle if Phil is still their team president.
You know, it's funny they say that, but George Hill has had precisely two seasons in his career, this one and that 2014-15 season, when he's actually gotten a run pick and roll, and he's been pretty good at it. You know, so maybe he fits well in the triangle because he seems like kind of this off the ball point guard, but he's someone maybe more than anyone in the league who's had their skills stilted by just never getting a chance to get the ball in their hands and play with a spaced floor until, you know, this year, essentially.
I agree with you. But I could see him thinking about it a little bit differently. And if Phil throws irresponsible money at him, as has happened in the recent past, that could turn it at least a little bit. I'm not saying he would definitively go there, but we brought this up a little bit earlier, but I think it's worth discussing again, which is that Utah is probably still the best of these options, even without Gordon Hayward, but they do lose a significant amount of their shine if he's gone. He is an all-star caliber player, a talent, and still, you know, pre-prime, going to be in his prime for his next contract. And they still would have Rodney Hood. They would still have Rudy Gobert. They would still presumably have Derek Favors, the other player they could have renegotiated and extended, who they did not. And that's probably still better than all of these other teams. But it's not a potential, like a fringe title contender or even a second or third round contender like the Jazz would be with Hayward.
The Jazz also, it's going to be an interesting game of with them too, because the Jazz, the Hill is going to have them over a barrel in some respects, especially if Hayward were to re-sign, because now they don't really have anyone to replace him. Exum, if you want to roll in with Exum as your starting point guard, you don't want to do that. Hill's cap hold is pretty small. They'll have his bird rights. On the other hand, though, this Jazz team has always been fiscally responsible, probably not a team that is looking at paying the tax. And if they max out George Hill and Gordon Hayward, you're right there in tax land, probably a little bit over that. Maybe they would move on from Derek Favors at that point, but he's only making $12 million. He's not even making that much. And he's been looking pretty good lately too. So a lot of reasons why, and then they're going to have to pay Rodney Hood coming up the year after that. So it would be certainly contrary to the Jazz pattern, who they've fastidiously avoided bad contracts. They even were, you know, negotiated too hard with Gordon Hayward. And now they're in this situation where he's a free agent earlier than he could have been if they had just ponied up another like $10 million back when they were doing extension negotiations with him. So I don't know, like he might have leverage over them. And a lot of it depends too on how well they do. You know, if they get swept in the first round by the Clippers or something, there's a lot less impetus to keep it together than if, you know, they go into the second round and give Golden State a hard series or something like that. So a lot of variables in play right now. And, you know, still, if it were me, I probably would have taken that money if I were George Hill. We'll see if he ends up doing better. Maybe I'll get proven wrong. His agents may be laughing all the way to the bank in that case. Let's hit a couple of these other news items real quickly so we can get into awards, because we've been quite long-winded with the news lately.
We have. The Thunder signed Norris Cole to be their utility point guard, probably better than Samaje Christian. And I cracked up. I made a comment to Fred Katz, who I think was the first person I saw with it, that they gave Norris Cole a one-year contract, so they're still paying Ronnie Price more and for longer than Norris Cole.
Yeah, well, they needed someone on the roster who plays good defense and can't do anything offensively. So after they cut Price, still, I can't believe they gave him 2 years at $2.5 million a year. It's completely insane. Last thing, Kenneth Faried, he is suffering again from back spasms. He is out of tonight's game for Chicago, which they won quite easily, and he could be almost 2 weeks or so before he's back. But really, the Nuggets have had a ton of injuries low-key this year, but they have so much depth when they have all their guys, it's tough to keep them all happy. But it's nice, they have plenty of options at power forward. Arthur, Chandler, Gallo can swing there. Hernan Gomez has been excellent when he's gone in. They have the two centers, so Faried doesn't need to play at center, so they'll be just fine without Faried. All right, you want to do some awards here? I want to start off with your pick for MVP. I continue to agonize over this. I mean, this took me like hours to go through this, and I still don't feel good about any of my picks. So I'll let you say your MVP pick first.
I'm still going with Russell Westbrook on the logic that I've used for MVP voting for years of, you know, replacing them with a league average player who fills that niche. And the Thunder are better now, you know, than they were before the trades at the deadline. I thought they did a nice job. That part doesn't matter at all in terms of the analysis, because I'm looking entirely backwards, and they would be lost without Westbrook in a way that the Rockets would not quite be without Harden. I mean, it's close. It's those two and then a Gulf and everyone else. But I think Westbrook has been more important to it. He is the locus of their offense. And yeah, I it's a close call. I don't think that they're the only wrong opinion that I would say in this is somebody saying it's a clear choice one way or the other.
I think that really what puts Russ over the top is his clutch performance, which has been unbelievable this year. His clutch usage, their team performance has been excellent in the clutch. He had a ridiculous finish again tonight in Utah. They're down four with a minute left. He comes down, hits a crazy step back three over George Hill, and then gets a rebound over Derek Favors, pushes it, goes one on four, gets an and one over George Hill, 6 points in two possessions, and gives them a lead, which they ended up winning. It looked like they're going to lose that game at home to Utah. He single-handedly beat Utah in another game. I mean, he's had like basically 10 games that he's just won them in the fourth quarter by himself, because as we know, he's the only one who shoots in the last 5 minutes of games for them. But it worked. He's been effective with that. I don't know how well that would work in the playoffs. I don't know how well it would work going forward, but your record is your record in the past, and he has done that. That has made him the most valuable player to me. I had James Harden second when we last did this, you know, pretty early in January. I now actually have him fourth. Again, this is just splitting hairs between any of these guys. And now my number two actually is Kawhi Leonard. What do you think of that?
I have Kawhi third, and I think that he, to me,
is Harden your two?
Yes.
Okay.
On the logic that he's still such an important part of their offense, and I don't care as much about defense from a player of that ilk when you are the alpha and the omega for a team's offense. I think that provides a lot of value, and Harden is certainly doing that for one of the league's best offenses. But Kawhi is having a spectacular under-the-radar season. The Spurs are, I mean, Matt Moore's piece notwithstanding, they're still an elite defensive team, which is, considering their surrounding talent, is pretty amazing. They've looked even better with Deadman replacing Pau Gasol, and Kawhi's offense has been great this year. So I think he separates out for those reasons and playing time and everything else over LeBron, who has been spectacular. I mean, we're giving LeBron the MVP, I think, in some ways actually gives him short shrift because he's still the best player in the league, but that's not what the award is.
Yeah, the Spurs, the reason I went with Kawhi, number one, the Spurs really have pulled away from the Rockets. The Rockets' team performance has dropped down a little bit. With Harden, they're only 4 points per 100 possessions worse when he's off the floor. And the defense does get a lot worse when he plays. And it doesn't matter as much for perimeter players, but this is not a one-year trend. He's been a bad defensive player for a long time. And I think you could make the argument that Kawhi has been almost his equal. I mean, Kawhi does it in a totally different way. But I mean, that incredible offensive rating when he's on the floor of 113, it's not like they have all this shooting talent. They play with two bigs all the time. And Tony Parker is the guy who Kawhi likes to operate with the ball in his hands. Tony Parker is not like setting him up or anything very often. And then you throw in that he is by far the best defensive player of any of the players that are in this conversation. And it's not a clear choice, certainly. LeBron was my number three. Harden also is kind of down there in RPM now. I think he's like 13th in RPM, which, again, that's not to be all end all, but it's a little bit part of the equation. LeBron is number five in RPM. He's still a lot better than Harden is on D. Also, just noting what happens to this Cavs team when he sits and or doesn't play. They're now 0-4 without him. Got blown out at home by a not very good Bulls team when he had to sit out with strep throat over the weekend. I think that he does have this shooting around him that helps maximize his talents. It's not like these players are so incredible, especially with some of the injuries they've had. Love being out, they haven't missed a beat at all with him being out. J.R. Smith, same thing after that initial flurry of losses. They've totally righted the ship now. So, and I think if you're going to ask the question of who the best player is in the NBA right now, I think it is pretty clearly LeBron. I thought that Steph was coming on. And then after that Sacramento game where KD played really poorly, they kind of started emphasizing him a little bit more. He's had some really bad games. So I was thinking that Steph was going to surge back into the lead in that question. That has not happened, and maybe he will now that Durant is out. We'll see it. But I think given what LeBron is able to do in the playoffs last year and how good Cleveland has been, he would still be my pick. Why is KD not really, you know, I mean, I think he's still, I think, in the same tier as all these guys. I think that all seven of those guys, or all six of those guys, Steph, KD, Harden, LeBron, Kawhi, Russ, are all very, very close to one another. But why is KD not in your top four?
Because he is not the biggest reason the Warriors' offense is successful. And for all of these other players, they are. And Durant has been good defensively. He also is not his team's best defensive player. Some of that is the unfairness of being on a team that is that good, that you don't have to fill either of those roles, but he hasn't. And when you're talking about value, it matters what you actually do for your team and how you make them great. He helps the Warriors, but he is afforded a flexibility that other players just do not have.
I also think that his individual offense and his offense when Steph has been off the floor this year, especially his inability to carry some of those bench units when he was kind of the impetus for them early in the year, in the start of the second and fourth quarters, has been a disappointment to me. I thought that he would be a little bit more dominating of an offensive player, and perhaps that is because he has sacrificed his game to some degree and deserves credit for that. But when he has tried to go back to being the old KD and really dominate, you know, I haven't seen quite as much from him as I remember. So, and maybe they're not as good at setting up the old KD the way Oklahoma City was. And also his shooting hasn't been as good. Like the hope was that he could get into like the mid 40s on three pointers this year. And in fact, he's shooting worse on threes, especially off the dribble threes. It's been horrendous. Still incredibly efficient, but lower usage. It's been more of a dependent player offensively. Still can get his own to be sure, but pretty lower usage, you know, 27% usage or so. So just hasn't been quite as dominating of a force. I think maybe he could do that if he were on another team, but we're judging what he in fact has done this year.
I want to go back a little bit to the best player in the league discussion briefly, just because the other component of talking about best player is the reasonableness that the weakness that they have is correctable. And so with Curry, we talked at length about the idea that it could possibly be that the expectation was something more in line with his 2014-15 season than what he did last year. Whereas with LeBron, we know the defense is there. We saw it less than 6 months. We saw it less than a year ago. You know, like that, it's there. It's just that it's not being present in this time. So I'm willing to give him the benefit of the doubt because of precedent.
Yeah, we'll see. Age is a weird thing like that, right? It's there until it's not, and you don't know when it's not. And I think it's just every year the playoffs are a little bit of a referendum. I thought that LeBron, though, oddly had a better playoffs at age 31 last year than he did at age 30, in part due to the fact that I think he was just really worn down. He suffered some sprained ankles and stuff. I think he just physically wasn't feeling as good as in 2015 as he was in 2016. But all right, let's move on to defensive player of the year. Another just pull your hair out between the two far and away best candidates, Draymond Green and Rudy Gobert. Who did you go with?
I have had Rudy Gobert in the top spot for the whole year. I think that he is the type of difference-making, rim-protecting center that I have prized forever, as a part of the reason why I was so high on him as a draft prospect, was the possibility, which has become reality. But Draymond's versatility defensively gives him the edge right now. They're very close from a team perspective. Both have dealt with imperfect personnel and injuries. I think that's been an underrated part of Gobert's excellent defensive season, is that the players that we thought were going to be anchors for them beyond Gobert have not played as much.
Yeah, he hasn't played next to Favors, and Favors is just now rounding into form. He's having to carry guys like Joe Johnson and Boris Diaw at the four.
But Draymond had to shoulder the burden when Zaza Pachulia was still figuring it out defensively, and the Warriors haven't been as crisp, I would say, overall this year as they were last year, which makes sense considering the changes in continuity that have happened with that. So I give the slight edge to Green right now, but it really is those two, and then I have trouble figuring out the third guy because the people who I trust from the eye test doesn't always bear it out statistically, but of course the statistics of defense are a challenge now as they always have been.
Yeah, statistics not really going to help you that well to decide. Gobert is number one, Draymond number two in defensive RPM. Both of them are way above everyone. Golden State, 99.8 defensive rating with Green on the floor. Gobert, the Jazz, have a 99.4 defensive rating with him on the floor. And obviously the number one defense is 101, so that's outstanding for both of those guys. Golden State has bigger leads at times, so they can take it a little bit easier on defense, but they score more as well, so it's easier to defend after you make a bucket. I think I'm still going to go with Draymond Green at this point, just because he has a little bit longer history of being at this level, 2 years now where he's been second, and I don't like to turn it into a lifetime achievement award based on past years, but when you consider it's just so close this year between these two guys, I would rather give it to the guy who has a little bit better of a history. And Gobert has been pretty close to this level himself the last couple of years, but hasn't played as much in either season. Draymond Green, we also have seen that he can do it in the playoffs, play great defense in the playoffs. He's done that 2 years in a row now, other than when he's suspended. And so I think that is just the tiebreaker for me. Golden State knows that they don't necessarily have to defend every night to win, and Utah knows that they do. And so to still be able to defend at that level, even when you know you don't have to, I mean, just look at Cleveland, for example, their defensive effort this year. That's why I'm going to go with Green. But again, this is just like incredibly close, and either way would be a great choice.
Was there anybody that stood out to you in the possibilities for third. I mean, I don't think anybody can even really rise into the conversation for number one, but was there anybody else in that next group? I mean, eventually we'll have to do all defensive teams, not right now. Like, you know, when we do the post awards after the season, is there anybody else that you stood out and went, oh, you know, I think they're the best of the rest?
Paul Millsap would be it. The Hawks have played pretty good D again. His defensive numbers are solid. He's been good as well the last 2 years. So that's probably who I would go with. But nobody else really, as you said, anywhere close to Green or Gobert.
It's so weird when you look through the teams that are in the top five, top 10 in defense. A lot of them are kind of usual suspects, but without a lot of the players that you would think of with them. You know, Charlotte's still top 10, Miami's 6, Atlanta's 5, but those teams have had a lot of turnover over the last few years. Even San Antonio at 1, you know, Kawhi Leonard has been one of the few stalwarts as they've moved around a lot of other pieces, and I still am partial to what he has done. I know defensive RPM does not like his season so far. I see a lot of
context. Yeah, they just have not defended as well with him on the floor, and maybe that's just unlucky, bad three-point defense. He's got to carry around the millstone of Gasol and Aldridge and Parker in that starting lineup for a lot of the year. But I mean, they're better when he's off the floor than when he's on. I mean, it's hard for me to put him in the conversation when that's the case, even though he does have this history of playing very well defensively, of course.
Yeah, so it's a hard conversation, and those players, a lot of them will be in the mix when we talk about all defensive teams, but I think that's really enough for right now. Do you want to do All-NBA? This is an interesting time for that.
It certainly is, but first, I want to talk about interesting suits from Indochino. Made-to-measure suits used to cost over $1,000. I actually own a made-to-measure suit that I paid well over $1,000 for back when I was a lawyer, and it seemed like such things were necessary. And frankly, it doesn't fit as well as my Indochino suit, which, of course, is much less. In fact, now you can get any premium Indochino suit for just $389 at Indochino.com when you enter that familiar cap space code at checkout. They just make it really easy for men to get great-fitting, high-quality suits and shirts as well. They do those, quite a few Indochino shirts. Also, one of the beauties of number one, very easy. You can either go to one of their 9 North American showrooms, or they have a tutorial on their website. You can measure 14 different measurements and send those into them. And 3 or 4 weeks later, your suit arrives. And you'll know it's yours because you can pick from hundreds of fabrics and patterns. You can choose your customizations, lapels, pleats, jacket lines, the angle of the pockets, single-breasted, double-breasted, pleats, no pleats. Whatever you want to do, you can make it happen at Indochino. So again, how to get started with them, Indochino.com, enter the promo code CAPSPACE at checkout. Easy to remember, of course, we talk about CAPSPACE all the time on the program, and that CAPSPACE code lets them know that you came from us as well, which is important. So you'll never have to worry about badly fitting suits, expensive trips to the tailor again. Get ready to look like $1 million at Indochino.com, promo code CAPSPACE. First team All-NBA. I have one change, I think, from last time. I had Kawhi knocking out Kevin Durant from the first team. And then I have Westbrook, Harden, LeBron, and Anthony Davis, who still played a ton of center. Maybe by the end of the year, he wouldn't be there, but I think he's still the best of the center candidate.
I have one change too, but I already had Kawhi there. My change is putting Anthony Davis back on the top line. He's deserved it so far. It's a strange group of centers this year. And
who did you have last time? Gasol?
I'm trying to... I think I had Gasol. I'm not entirely sure. It's been a while. But I think I had Mark and had Anthony Davis, also partially because I was just bitter about Davis counting as a center. And in the 2 months since the last time we did this, Davis has played primarily center and done an awesome job. So we'll...
Yeah, despite complaining about it, and getting injured at times too. So maybe he's right to complain. But I think we're in agreement then. We've got the same five for first team All-NBA.
I don't like it, but yes.
Well, but this means you're right. Why wouldn't you like that?
Jesus.
What about second team?
Second team is harder because you have this challenge. I deal with this a lot with, and Chris Paul is the perfect encapsulation of this. Chris Paul has been the third best guard in the league this year. But
When
he's played, but he's missed a bunch of time.
You think he's been better than Steph?
I do. I think he's been better than Steph, but I have him on the third team because of the time that he has missed. I don't love doing that, but when you start to get into the realm where you've missed a significant number of games, games, then I have to take a little bit off just because you're providing less value to the team. I have no opposition to those who feel that should not be a consideration. I understand that logic. So my second team is Lowry and Steph Curry. I think both of them have been wonderful this year. They've been integral parts of successful teams. And then my second team has my forwards has a change because Jimmy Butler to me has outplayed Giannis during this stretch. The Bucks were this.
I moved him up also. Yeah.
The Bucks were this wonderful success story, and Giannis was a central figure in it. The Bucks have fallen off. Giannis has fallen off. Jimmy Butler has played well when he's been on the floor. And then the other change that I had was I tossed and turned over this, but I have Rudy Gobert as the best or second best defensive player in the league this year. Offensively, he's having a nice season. I feel like that makes him second team over Gasol. Marc Gasol is probably a better player right now, but Gobert is being that linchpin of his team in a way that Gasol is not.
Yeah, I don't know about that. I have Gasol second team NBA and Gobert third. Cousins not pictured. We'll talk about him in a second. But I mean, you say he's not the linchman. I mean, maybe he's not quite as good defensively, but this Memphis defense is still really good, even without some of the defensive stalwarts that they've had in the past playing as much. I mean, and their offense is basically Gasol and Conley, and that's it. And Gasol, his three-point shooting just is such a problem for any traditional center who tries to guard him. And then if you do try to put a smaller guy in him, Gasol can go right down to the block and force a double team and carve you up with his passing. So I think, and he still is very solid defensively, not at Gobert's level, certainly, but still a wonderful defensive center who, I mean, I can't remember the last center who is as kind of slow and corpulent as him that was this good defensively. It's been a long time since that sort of player has been able to make an impact defensively. And then you mentioned I had KD and Butler as well. I agree that Butler has moved ahead of Giannis. I mean, the Bulls, I think they're like plus 2.7 when he's on and like negative 10 when he's off. Just completely insane how bad they are without him and just what he has done to prop their team up. And it's not like, you know, the units that play without him have like all bad players either. You know, it's like Dwayne Wade trying to run the offense, and it's not, they don't like play a bunch of bad players necessarily with when Butler's off the floor either, I don't think. And then I had Steph and CP3 as my two guards. I think that they're still have better players, better track records than some of the guys below them. You had Kyle Lowry. I actually have Lowry off my team, and maybe that's a little bit too harsh. I guess I'm just maybe reacting to this recent Toronto swoon as Boston and Washington have surged. I went with Isaiah Thomas and John Wall, and Lowry again, awesome in the on-off stats, 62% true shooting, but Toronto has not kept up this ridiculous best ever offense that they had for like the first month and a half of the year. And, you know, I think if they can right the ship, I mean, it's going to be without Lowry now. He's having that surgery. So that's another reason too. I think with Paul being back, Lowry now going to be out, you know, I'm kind of maybe even looking forward with this a little bit so I don't have to change it again next time. But I think between all the, I would put Steph still because of the way he's played over the past two seasons and still even this year as well, a level above the rest of those contenders. But between Paul, Thomas, Wall, and Lowry, just nearly impossible to choose between those guys.
Okay, so I think we've pretty much laid the groundwork for the third team guards, but who are your third team forwards?
Draymond Green and Giannis Antetokounmpo.
Same here. Did you struggle with Millsap? Because I thought Millsap was the next guy.
I mean, he's just not as good as Draymond Green. I think Green is just more of a force defensively. I don't know even that Millsap's probably a little bit better than Green is on offense, but Millsap is having more of a down year offensively this year. His team hasn't been that great. Green is, you know, both these guys play really well in the on-off stats, the RPM stats, but Green I think is like number two in the whole league. I went with Green, and then Giannis still has been pretty solid as well. The Bucks have swooned a little bit, but he's still right up there. And then my third team center was Rudy Gobert. This might be a good time to discuss why DeMarcus Cousins did not appear on here. We probably talked about it last time, but why is he not in there for you?
Because the primary job of being a center is to help the defense. And while he is a game-changing offensive player, he has not done that in the same way that Anthony Davis even has. Davis got to prove that as a center during the time period since the last time we did this. Gobert, Gasol have as well. And Cousins hasn't been able to perform in that way. And he hasn't carried a team really at any sort of time. And while the Kings have less talent than a lot of the other teams around them, he's good. You know, Cousins is an immensely talented player, but he does not do enough to jump over these players that are not only having great seasons, but are having a greater positive impact on their teams, and those teams are doing better.
And we've reached the point where he just sucks on defense. There's no two ways around it. Like, he can't play in the pick and roll anymore. He gets winded after three times down the court, never gets back on D, either because he's too exhausted or because he's complaining about a call. You know, he does that five times a game and they end up giving up buckets. I mean, if you just watch the film on him, it's pretty appalling how bad he is defensively. I think the Kings were something like 27th in defense when he departed. And the time was, you could make the argument that he was good defensively that time. Is not now. Maybe he could get back there if he gets in a little better shape, tries a little bit harder, gets into a different defensive culture. But it's not like Dave Yeager is some bad defensive coach, you know. You could maybe have blamed it on George Karl last year. But aside from that, and I think even offensively too, he has a really high usage, but not as efficient as you might hope for a center. Granted, he's the only option that the Kings had a lot of nights, and I think he is a fabulous offensive player. But and then you throw in all the stuff, the technicals, missing time, just his interactions with his teammates to the point where they felt like they needed to move him, just being a distraction, being difficult to go to work with every day. All that stuff adds up to me to not being on the all NBA team. Nikola Jokic might have been the other one we could have talked about there, but to me just hasn't played enough minutes, and he is also just really bad on defense as well.
Don't worry, I'm going to talk about Jokic soon enough.
Hayward was probably the other toughest omission for me, Gordon Hayward. He really has been outstanding at times. I do think that against the best defenses, he can struggle sometimes. I thought Andre Robertson really shut him down in crunch time today, where they weren't really going to him directly. I think against bad defenses, like that Washington game against Otto Porter, like he killed him in the last few minutes, and I think he had 30 points in that game. But still, a wonderfully versatile talent, has been very efficient this year, hitting his three ball, which he hasn't in past years. An underrated defender as well is Hayward. Really has worked on his body a lot, but still just not quite there with Giannis and Draymond yet. But, you know, he's rising. He's definitely rising, in my opinion, and a guy whose game is probably underappreciated nationally. And it was good to see him make the All-Star team this year.
Where do you want to go next?
Well, I guess we'll just talk about a few other honorable mentions to Mike Conley, Klay Thompson, although the on-off sets don't really care for his game. Kyrie Irving, granted they're worse when he's off the floor than when he's on the floor. I'm sorry, they're worse when he's on the floor than when he's off the floor. Millsap, you mentioned, DeMar DeRozan, Kevin Love, and Jokic, all I think just deserving some mention, but Lowry and Hayward were really the two where I had to agonize over leaving them off.
And for me, it's that seventh guard. You know, I left off Isaiah, yeah. You left off Lowry. That we already talked about that a little bit, though.
All right, I think this is actually a good time to call it quits for tonight. Why don't we do that, and we can finish this up with our next episode, since we're at the 50-minute mark here. We spent all that time on news. So we'll wrap it for today. Don't forget about the Twitter NBA show, Second Screen, tomorrow, 8 Eastern on Periscope, at Nate Duncan NBA on Periscope. We'll be tweeting about it, of course, as well. And our sponsors today, Indochino, use the Capspace code to get any premium suit for $389. And MeUndies, that micromodal fabric, incredibly soft. Give them a shot. Get 20% off your first pair, MeUndies.com/Capspace. Thanks so much for listening, and we'll be back at some point later this week. Maybe not tomorrow night because I'm going to be in the air to Boston, but we'll hit you up with the podcast at some point. Talk to you all then.